Thanks, Brian.
Are you going skiing?
I want to check the hallway, Lee.
Where?
Hernandez and is it Halland or Holland? Halland?
Holland, yeah.
Okay. You can have a seat on this side if you want to do that, and thank you. Okay, I see. It looks like we've got counsel for the appellant as well.
More peoples.
Thank you, Lee. As counsel are getting situated, I want to welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. I'm John Rodenberg. This is Judge Larkin and Judge Sleater. The third matter on our oral calendar today is Hernandez versus Halland. You can be seated. Our rules are that there will be 15 minutes for the principal argument of each of counsel. Appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if the appellant wishes to use that time. When you approach the podium, give us your name and the party you represent. We know that, but when someone listens to the recording, we need them to have that information. Watch the light, that'll tell you how much time is left, and you can adjust the podium up and down with a little toggle switch that's somewhere underneath there, so make sure you're comfortable when you start speaking. Whenever appellant's counsel is ready, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Is this on? Yes.
Yes.
Good morning. My name is Margaret Murphy, and I represent appellant Michael Hernandez. May it please the court. So people come to the court expecting to be heard, and there's no expectation of perfection, but they do expect that both sides will be listened to and that the judge will come to a fair decision. And those decisions are given great weight, as they should be, because the judge is allegedly listening to both sides. But there comes a time when decisions have been so lopsided and so unreasonable that they require a second look. And I hope that Your Honors will be doing that today. In this case, it started back in December of 2014 when this child was born, and they have been arguing since that time. Ms. Holland has had a very long career with drugs and alcohol usage.
Can I just interrupt a moment, Ms. Murphy? Was it Judge Robb, and you made mention about the lack of listening. I just wanted to confirm the long litigation that's been going on. Judge Robb been the same judge?
No, sir.
How many judges?
It was referee Madden before, and then it switched over to Judge Robb.
How much before? In other words, the order that was issued the year earlier?
That was Judge Robbins.
It was. Yes. So Judge Robb has a pretty good idea of both parties and the litigious nature, the animosity, all the issues?
I would guess so. Yes, sir.
Okay.
In this case, Mr. Hernandez was given the opportunity to call a drug test whenever he suspected that Ms. Holland was using. And he saw that Ms. Holland was speaking very quickly. She was looking a bit haggard, and she was using very short sentences. All of which were how she acted when she was using. So he decided that it was time to call it a test. He served her first via our family wizard at 4:15, and she responded at 4:30-something. And then at the exchange at 4:59, he actually hands her the papers. He sends in the pictures showing the times when these things occurred. Ms. Holland says that she was served at 6 p.m. She offers no evidence that she was served at 6 p.m., but the judge found that she was served at 6 p.m. The facts do not support this finding.
Does that matter?
Does it matter? It just
if the district court clearly erred by saying she was served at 6 p.m.,
I think
does it make a difference in the ultimate determination of this case?
I think it shows his way of looking at the case, Your Honor.
Okay.
I think throughout all of this, you know, all the snarky comments, all of the, everything is decided in favor of the woman. And I'm not sure exactly why that is, but I thought, I used that example because it so clearly shows that he's not paying attention.
Is it true, Ms. Murphy, that that order, that provision, did not require, the order did not require compliance be within 24 hours, nor did the order say that fail to comply would be considered a failed test? In other words, it's undisputed that neither of those requirements were there.
That's true. It's undisputed that neither of those requirements were there. However, throughout the litigation, which started 4 years ago, it has always been that any dirty test would be, any failure to test would be considered dirty. And that is in his order, you know, that she was going to consider the, continue the random tests for, I think it was another 4 months or something, and that any missed test would be considered.
And that was in the provision that was expired? It was no longer in effect, in other words, at the time of this demand?
Correct.
Okay.
But nothing changed that order. So we believe...
Well, except that it had a time limit.
What had a time limit?
The provision of the order that said she's going to continue random UAs, and if any is missed, it shall be counted positive, had an end date, and we had passed the end date. So, yes, it was still the order, but we were past the end date. We were past the period at which failure to comply with a random UA requested by someone other than your client would be counted as a positive.
That's true, Your Honor, except for the fact that that was what had been used and that was what was accepted. And when the order first came out, we called the court and said, well, how would we do this? And the answer we got was the order speaks for itself.
Counsel, so that's, and I appreciate your drawing our attention to the lengthy history of this case, but at the end of the day, this was a motion to modify custody, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Sorry.
So at issue was whether your client had presented prima facie evidence to show endangerment, and as I understand it, his main claim of endangerment was her failure to report and test, as he had requested, constitutes a showing of a positive test, and that equates with endangerment. Is that the argument?
That's part of the argument, Your Honor.
What other evidence was offered regarding current circumstances that suggested drug use and endangerment?
Her current boyfriend was also a drug user with a felony record in drug use. She was also, throughout this entire time, she was going to concerts and the Stillwater 4th of July parties, and all of that had been offered as evidence.
Going to the Stillwater 4th of July public events?
Not the public events, no, the boat party. Every 4th of July there's a huge boat party right in Stillwater, I mean, and she would go.
And anyone who participates in that is using illegal controlled substances?
No, that would be going too far, Your Honor, but certainly there are lots
of... So what proof was offered that she was using illegal controlled substances at that boat party?
Your Honor, she has a long history of drug use, and allegedly she had stopped drug use, so she wouldn't normally surround herself with drug users at that time. I mean, it just wouldn't be safe and it wouldn't be prudent. It would be much harder for her to stay clean and sober.
The district court wrote that it wasn't persuaded that there was a prima facie case because under the terms of the order, the missed test did not constitute a positive test, so he wasn't going to treat it as a positive test, and that petitioner had offered nothing but speculation to show drug use, such as, well, look at who she associates with and look at the events that she attends. Was it fair for the district court to describe that evidence as speculative?
No, Your Honor, it's been too long of a time. When you look at this case as a whole, as he allegedly was doing, you know, she has obfuscated drug use, she has had positive tests, she's had altered tests, she's had diluted tests. There is clear evidence of drug use in the past.
Well, that's just it, isn't it? You needed to show evidence of current drug use to show current endangerment.
Right, and that was the reason for the test, but she didn't take it. So if the only, if the caveat is that it's only going to be positive if she chooses to take the test, why wouldn't she just not choose to take the test as she did here?
Ms. Murphy, was there a request as part of this motion, and maybe there was and I didn't see it, to modify the now existing drug test requirement to reinstate a presumption of use if one fails to attend and or a timeline?
I guess I didn't write it in those words. I think that we should.
But that's the reason I'm asking that. That's essentially what your client is suggesting. There should have been an inference like there is in criminal sentences where sometimes the judge puts it right in an order. You fail to appear, it'll be considered a failed test. And apparently that was an earlier provision. But the point being that's what your client would like the court to infer here, but clearly that's not in the language now.
It's true, but he didn't give us any language to follow. And so
what had happened in the past. Correct, as I understand it, though, she was willing to do it and, in fact, reported to do it, but not within the 24 hours. And by that point, they said it was no longer paid for or something to that extent. So it's undisputed she did appear, but not within 24 hours.
And she could have paid for it herself and certainly have gotten that test. But when we set this up, we had talked to a lot of drug experts as to what the best time frame is. And in the past, she had been given either 4 hours or 8 hours to test. We gave her 24 hours. And the reason we didn't give her more than that is that it would have been too easy to adulterate the findings at that point. If she had started drinking water immediately and continued to eat, it would not have shown as a diluted test, but it would have gotten rid of the drugs. So we didn't dare put it longer than 24 hours.
Counsel, in addition to showing endangerment, there are three other factors that need to be established for a prima facie case. What evidence did you offer on those factors?
The change in circumstances was that we believe she was using drugs at this time, and the endangerment was also that she was using drugs and surrounding herself with drug users.
But what evidence did you offer? You're speculating that she's using drugs based on her history, her associations, and her failure to report for the test. Did you offer evidence regarding she's missing work, the child is not being taken to appointments, the child is late for visits? Anything that would reflect current drug use?
To be candid, Your Honor, the child is quite regularly late for visits. We don't even count that anymore. But this is a performance enhancement drug, so we would not anticipate large downfalls in that respect. She was 15 minutes late for work that day, but I'm not sure that says anything. I think that the thrust of our case is that we were given an option to have her test, and she refused to test.
Understood. Could you tell me, because it's not clear, what is the legal basis on which you ask the district court to change the child's daycare provider? I understand the reasons, but what legal authority did the district court judge have, in your view, to dictate where the child goes to daycare?
Your Honor, there is some notion that a judge will be fair and impartial. And in this case, Ms. Holland was paying basically for nothing. I think they charged her with maybe 10%. And he was paying everything. So what we offered was that clearly this was just a waste of family resources, because 3% of the daycare that he was paying for was not being used on a regular basis, on any basis. So it was really a fairness. And we also showed that there were similarly situated daycares that charged $100 a week less. So it was practical, and it was unfairness. This is a man who He has his parents living with him. He has a lot of responsibilities. And he has been overly burdened.
Did he move to reduce his child support obligation?
No, Your Honor. Actually...
Well, what I'm asking is, isn't part of a child support obligation meant to cover medical expenses, daycare expenses, those things?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
So conceptually, I could see someone asking to reduce their child support obligation to account for the fact that the amount of resources necessary for child care are lower than anticipated. Did he bring a motion of that nature, or instead just say, I want the daycare changed?
We had used that, but not in this most recent one, no. Okay. No, Your Honor. The judge said that he moved to Rochester solely for his own good. But the reality was is he was paying $430 a month in daycare before this. And when he moved to Rochester to accept that job at Mayo Clinic, his salary increased incredibly. And she went from getting $400 a month to almost $2,000 a month. So it was in everybody's best interest that he took that job.
I'm not recalling any findings of fact about moving to Rochester in the order that's before us.
That's true. That was the order before, Your Honor.
Okay. Because, again, what we're reviewing is the order before us, which does not encompass the entire history of this family, which solely
True.
Encompasses a decision whether adequate evidence was presented to establish a prima facie showing of endangerment such that there should have been a hearing.
Right. And what... I know that I'm bringing up a lot of past decisions, but every decision follows that same pattern. We have gone...
Okay, but then if what you're arguing is this judge is not impartial, then wouldn't the remedy be a motion to remove and then appeal that? I mean, you're here for review of a denial for an evidentiary hearing on a motion for change of custody
yes.
based on an allegation of changed circumstances endangerment.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you're arguing this judge isn't fair.
Well, that's true. It's
a different legal issue.
Partly it is, but what I'm hoping the court can see is that usually a lower court's decision is given very great weight. And I want to show you how
Understood.
His decisions have not lived up to that. But yes, we are asking that there be a finding that, yes, this was a dirty test, and we do deserve a hearing. We showed clearly that she could have tested both before work, after work. Plus, she had a job that normally you can get off of work to go to wherever you need to go to. So there was no weaponizing, as the judge said.
Time is up, so what I'm going to do is if you want to just finish with one sentence or something, then we'll go to respondent.
No, I'm
good. You will have 5 minutes on rebuttal if you want to use that time. Counsel for respondent, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Emily Cooper. I'm counsel for the respondent, Jody Halland. The issue raised by appellant has been considered and rejected by the district court on multiple occasions. In the decision dated November 1st, 2018, which is on appeal before the court today, Judge Rodman made specific findings rejecting the argument before this court today. He made credibility determinations, and he made sound factual findings based on his more than two-year history presiding over this family in the district court. In his decision, Judge Rodman found, and I quote, appellant's motions required the court to readdress matters previously ruled on in what was essentially part of the request for a perpetual do-over. He additionally stated that appellant's conduct, when considered as a whole, disproportionately contributed unreasonably to the length and expense of the proceedings, and then went on to award conduct-based attorney fees for the second time. And finally...
Ms. Cooper, just to clarify, this was Anise Peterson, the first stage of the custody modification, the hearing on August of last year that led to the November order we're reviewing.
Correct.
And so when you mentioned credibility, it was simply a matter of reviewing the affidavits submitted and arguments of counsel?
It was, and if you'll note, there was a footnote in the court order where the judge noted that he observed appellant's behaviors. And in doing so, he incorporated that into part of his ruling as well.
In relation to the attorney's fees?
In relation, I believe his observation of appellant's behavior was in relation to appellant's claim about how the parties interacted during exchanges. And in his review and his observations of appellant led him to believe that appellant's claims in his affidavit were not credible with regard to that. And I think that colored somewhat his view of the arguments that were being brought before him and the allegations.
Thank you.
But under the standard, the district court was required to accept as true the allegations presented in support of the motion for a change of custody.
Yes, but not to the extent that you reject contrary evidence that's or evidence that can help the court to determine whether or not the context of the allegations. And in addition to that, we cited to Axford v. Axford, which notes that a court can reject an entire claim for an evidentiary hearing if the allegations in the affidavit are completely devoid of any substance and are completely unsubstantiated. And Judge Robin outright found in this instance that there were all the claims that were brought by appellant were unsubstantiated. I think this court pointed this out in appellant's counsel's argument that all of the claims were speculative. For instance, Judge Robin found that, simply put, there is no persuasive evidence indicating that mother is abusing drugs at this time beyond father's non-credible claimed observations. And even more telling, which falls within the Axford purview, neither party provides any information warranting a claim that the child's health or well-being is endangered or impaired in either party's care. And appellant asks the court to speculate that the child is endangered by his unsubstantiated claims of mother's drug use. There was simply no evidence before the court that would allow the court to reach any determination that the Neese-Peterson standard had been met and that appellant's burden had been met. Appellant's entire argument and his submissions to the court are yet another attempt to have this perpetual do-over continue. His entire argument is a request that this court impose conditions that Judge Robin specifically rejected after a plain reading of that earlier September 5th, 2017 order, wherein there was no requirement for testing within 24 hours, and there was no language that would indicate that a refusal to test should be resulting in a finding that the test would be considered positive. In fact, Judge Robin's assessment of appellant's allegations in his order dated on March 5th, 2018 are very telling and applicable to appellant's claims today. In that order, Judge Robin, and I quote, noted that father's submissions are long on speculative amateur pharmacology and short on information that mother is currently abusing chemicals. And in that order, he again additionally ordered conduct-based attorney fees against appellant for continuing to relitigate and bring back the same issues. Judge Robin ruled that appellant failed to meet his burden under the Neese-Peterson standard for an evidentiary hearing. As the court pointed out, the district court is to take the allegations presented by the moving party to be true, but that standard has been further refined in the court's ruling in Axford, as I pointed out. The court, Judge Robin, did determine that there was no credible evidence, that the allegations made by appellant were unsubstantiated, and thus rejected his claim and denied his motion appropriately.
Ms. Cooper, can I just clarify, was this motion brought within 1 year of the previous custody order?
There was a hearing, there was an order that was issued on September 5th, 2017, which did award the parties custody. There was an order issued March 5th, 2018, in which the court denied a request by appellant to modify custody, I believe. And so I guess depending on how you interpret that, is that if that is an order establishing custody and parenting time, then that order was issued. And then this order was issued November 1st of 2018.
The reason I'm asking, I didn't see reference to the exception under 518-18C if it's within 1 year. And so your client didn't make that argument, and the judge did not make a conclusion as to whether this was a premature argument subject to the immediate endangerment of physical, emotional health?
I believe that appellant's argument at the district court level was all endangerment, and claiming that there would not be the 1 year. The 1 year requirement doesn't apply because it's all is an endangerment claim from its face. The district court's November 1st decision was supported by the evidence before the trial court. There's no errors of law. The order should be upheld and this appeal should be denied. To grant appellant's request for relief today requires the court to find that an affidavit that presents non-credible claims and no persuasive evidence entitles that party to a Niece Peterson evidentiary hearing. And such a decision would invite frivolous litigation and perpetual do-overs. I have nothing further.
Thank you. You have 5 minutes for rebuttal, Ms. Murphy, if you wish to use that time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, there is no doubt that Judge Robin hates my client. There's absolutely no doubt about it, the way he treats him in court, everything. However, the March order was also based on endangerment. When the child arrived for parenting time with a huge welt on his head and he was vomiting. So my client took him into a clinic where the first one was a nurse practitioner, and she goes, you know, I just don't know. I can't make any decisions. So my client takes the child to a Mayo Clinic, and the doctor says, yeah, this looks like it was a concussion. And the child is saying that one of the many boyfriends threw a bottle. Now, none of this is pertinent today because it's in a past order. But that's what that case was about.
Ms. Murphy, can I go back to that first statement you made? It's a rather strong statement to make that the court hates your client. I'm somewhat assuming you didn't mean it literally as that he has ruled against your client, and in this case, and the motion found a basis for attorney's fees. But
and he has personal animus against my client, yes. The hate is too strong. You're correct.
What is the basis for personal animus against your client?
I have no idea, Your Honor.
No, what factual basis do you raise that issue?
Well, he makes snarky comments like, Ms. Murphy, tell your co-counsel to be quiet. Then he is rather belittling of his study of drugs and alcohol and the effects. And my client is a scientist, and he thinks like a scientist, and he acts like a scientist. And so his interpersonal skills are not the same as a lot of people. But he is very, very analytical, and the judge clearly does not appreciate that. In many of our affidavits, we have cited to different experts and how this worked. And my client is just a very smart man. But the judge does not appreciate it at all. He did make, going back to Ms. Cooper's argument, he did make specific findings, but it's his own order that gave us the right to test. If that right to test has no meaning, if there's absolutely no substance to it, what is the point of that order? That was supposed to give us the positive up or down whether or not this child was in danger. And she had 24 hours to do it and chose not to. That's not a frivolous argument. That's used in every criminal court of the land. A failure to test is a positive test, and granted, it didn't specifically say that in this order, but it did show that she was unwilling to test, and therefore it should be considered against her that this was a positive test, that she would have tested positively. You know, there is a circumstantial nature to a lot of this because we cannot watch somebody 24/7. We don't have any right to
be in her place at all times. But when she sends out notices on Facebook that she's just been to a concert in Detroit that's known for drug use, and we've got a notice from the Detroit police saying that, you know, all these hospitals should ramp up their care because there's so much drug use at this concert, that's a red flag. It might be circumstantial, but it is a very important circumstance that somebody avoiding drugs would not be there. So I hope you will look at this and realize that this child deserves better than this. And give us the opportunity to dig into more substance with an evidentiary hearing where we can get the analysis of some people who know drugs well enough to support the fact that a test not taken is a positive test. Thank you.
Thank you. The matter is submitted. We thank counsel for your briefing and argument. We'll issue our decision within the statutory time frame. Thank you.
Thank you. What do I do with this?
I'm sorry?
You can leave it.
Leave there.
Yes, we'll pick that up. Or Lee will.
Bus boy.